sorry to
that. Good, good.
You only come to meet me, don't you?
No, I'm not gonna go.
I know.
No, no, not today. Not today. Shop not
today.
Not today. How far?
Thank you.
Yeah. I wonder what that temple is. You.
How many temples are we talking about?
Two purposes.
Yeah, because I said, You thought you must select the food.
Thank you.
I'm good, how are you?
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Kalpi, I sometimes forget, I think you are a member of the committee. I want to welcome the department, Gishonom Kalibi. Now I call.
I'm not honorable yet.
No, you're getting there. It does take time. Honorable members, welcome to the department. Mr. Morotova is leading the delegation. The HOT is not around. He said one of those meetings where the only apology accepted is a certificate. So we don't kill people here. People can apologize and be reduced from meetings. And welcome again to PMG. You are with us all the time, you know. Sometimes I think you are members of the committee. And special welcome goes to the department in the province, the provincial office. We work together, visiting farms and other farms are chasing us. So, welcome everybody. The purpose of the meeting today is actually to engage on follow-ups made after our visit to the farms. Let me go to the department to give us a brief. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. With me, I have the provincial leadership that is going to lead on the presentation, but we thought it fit that the chief inspector also comments briefly on the kind of interventions that they are currently making to improve inspection. And another member of the committee, Mr. Kalipi, who has been with you. We thought that if there are other issues that relate to collective bargaining, we'll also assist in addressing those issues. So the inspector and the chief director in the province, Mr. David Sau and Dewo Teja, who will lead a report on your visit, and Mr. Dovide Lamate, who also the chief inspector, will review on the current development in so far as capacitating the inspection is concerned. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, members of the department. Good morning. As indicated, my name is Dewo Teja. I'm the Chief Director of Western Cape Department of Labour. I will take in the members through the presentation in terms of covering all farms that we visited with the committee and indicating exactly what has transpired and the follow-ups that have been made and the implications thereof. And then we'll then take obviously questions after that. Thank you very much. As members might recall, we had grouped the farms in different groups so that we could cover a whole range of them in a very short space of time. So when you see group, it basically means the grouping of those particular farms, and then I'll then talk to the contraventions in terms of labor relations,
and also OHS ones, and the correct measure that has been taken on that. Firstly, honourable members, we had gone to Medal Plus Kirom, which is in Cyprus now. The labour relations contravention that our inspector has found and noted at that point, which was that period between January, I think it was in January, beginning of the year. The clause 6, section 1, it was in relation to information concerning pay, that is in terms of the payment of the staff at that particular farm. There was also clause 9, and on the matter of written particulars of employment, that is contractual issues. And clause 17.2, it was a question of night work in terms of what the hours and the payment in relation to network. Now, with regards to occupational health and safety, OHS, contraventions, and I wrote my chief inspector, he's got notes for me so that I can indicate this. What is HHCR? Basically means hazardous chemical substances regulation 11. There it had to do with the area for washing of the personal protective equipment, PPE. We found out that there was no place in particular for them. After they had gone to the farm to spray, they needed to wash. So employer needed to wash coordinated triple P and double PE, sorry. We also found out the issue regarding providing of chemical training to employees. As much as they were a pleasant room, but in terms of handling the chemicals, they needed to be training for them, and we needed to find out exactly what type of training they had gone. So we had issues with that. And also there was the issue of employer to provide chemical personal protective equipment free of charge and replace when necessary. Some of them weren't in good condition, and obviously the regulation, the employer needs to provide those as opposed to employees buying them themselves. Also, outside the poison room, they needed to be a shower so that they can clear, rather wash off the chemical, and also in case of emergencies, so they can clear their eyes. They needed to be a shower for the eyes or liquid that is provided for those who are using chemicals. And lastly, the employer provide tractor and also protection that covers the chemicals. Now, the corrective action on all those, starting from the first one, we then indicated that there should be pay slips and contract of employment that needs to be corrected. Because remember, when we do this, we do it in two parts. We do the administrative part where we sit with the employer in the office and go through the papers, and we then said they must have pay slips that reflect. We also advise that a pay slip doesn't have to be a sophisticated type of pay slip as long as it reflects the relevant information. Secondly, the employer complied with the notices issued. The notice that were issued on that, they then corrected. The protective gear were provided by the employer, so no employee was buying this themselves, so they provided that. And also, the covers were then restored to ensure a safety of operations. So that's basically, in terms of this particular farm, what has transpired and the corrective measures that have been put in place with immediate effect. The second farm, which was Koranhoogte Boerdery Farm. There were no labor relations contraventions that were found, but in terms of OHS, it was also here in relation to the washing of chemicals after the employees have actually used chemicals, specifically the cleaning of personal protective equipment. Also, employer wants to provide a shower and also eye facilities, as I've also indicated in the previous farm, where they have to wash their hands, wash their clothes and their bodies, and also in terms of emergencies with chemical included in one's eye so that they'll be able to clear it. Corrective action with regards to this, the notices were complied with, employer takes responsibility for laundry of protective gear of sprayers. What we can emphasize is that even though there are facilities where employees wash this, they even have to wash this themselves. The employer needs to appoint someone in the management to wash those particular clothes. So that has been done. Groenvlei Farm, no labor relation contraventions with regard at the time when we were doing inspections. However, with regard to OHS, occupational health and safety, the chemicals management of the chemicals was satisfactory in terms of how they've designated the different types of chemicals within, and also outlining the layers for those chemicals. Also, the issue of personal protective clothing is provided here. Now, since the structure of the building where the chemicals are kept are very old, the Department of Labor made a recommendation that chemical store wooden door be replaced with a steel door. This also emphasizes the matter of safety, so that no one can easily go into the store and take those particular chemicals, and also to protect those that are not necessarily trained in handling this, so that door was necessary. The corrective action with regard to OHS that I've mentioned, the 17 workers that were interviewed received more than the minimum wages. They were provided. There needs to be provided with payslip, also contracts and statutory payments. If you recall, I've indicated in the first one the issue of night work and overtime. So those are what statutory payments will then mean in that regard. Moving forward to the farm, Lentless Boerdery Farm. With regard to labor relations contraventions, the following contraventions were discovered. Section 31 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, or in terms of implementation of attendance registers, that's what we found. 16 of the SBC sectoral damages setting, employer to provide employees with pay slips. UIC Act registration by Employment Insurance Commissioner, which is basic unemployment insurance act. Those are the issues that we found out. And with regards to occupational health and safety, now from an occupational health and safety and safety perspective, this one has a relatively small workforce. And the chemical store, together with its management, was compliant, and therefore personal protective clothing was issued with proper use of it. So there was no issues with regards to those. Corrective action with regards to labor relations, attendance registers be implemented as per our directive. All employees issued with pay slips, and all employees were then registered with UI unemployment insurance. So those are in place as we speak. Eight Newt Farm, we didn't find any labor relations contraventions, but with regards to OHS, the issue again of protective gear, personal protective gear, washing after use by farm workers when they come from the fields after spraying was an issue, which we raised with them. And also the issue of risk assessment for chemicals. I've already indicated with the other farm with regards to the different types of chemicals in the what they call health camera or poison room. They need to be very clearly demarcated. They need to be very clearly labeled in terms of color. Now, also the issue of shower facilities needed to be put hygienic. You know, sometimes you find that there is indeed a shower, but when you go in, you can see the shower has not necessarily been used, or it's not in a state that can necessarily be used by people on an everyday basis. Now, corrective action that we then implemented, employer complied with sexual discrimination farm workers during the first inspection. All notices were complied with except the risk assessment. This must be done in season when the activities are in full operation, and this will be evaluated in the new season. I think we're going into that season, and we'll then follow up on those in terms of implementation. Then moving forward, Voorburg Farm, hours of work payment of overtime is advocated with the other one plus five. That was the only thing of hours of overtime, then time and a half. OHS employer, again, the issue of contaminated with chemicals with regards to personal protective gear or equipment in terms of washing after utilization, there was an issue there. Employers provide eye wash facilities. We didn't find eye wash facilities. There was a shower, but no eye wash facilities in terms of emergency if something has spilled in one's ear. Corrective action. Employer complies with payments for overtime notice and are based on physical walkthrough inspection only. Yeah. And the employer in this, at that point, he was selling the farm. So there was issues around the selling of the farm at that point in time. The employees themselves were a bit confused as to what is going to happen now that this farm is being sold. Now, only when employee stays on the farm, the employer sold the farm as a going concern. The employer will correct details on the payslip. The employer has given package to the longest living employee. Occupational health and safety notices were complied with regards to the provision of eyewash, not earwash, eyewash facilities. Thank you. moving forward. All over the and more than once and first LRA, no contraventions. Coaches, here the employer was instructed verbally to have first aid box accessible because we couldn't find a first aid box. So we said we want to see it and it must be in a place that is accessible. In the case of emergency, everyone should know where it is and be able to have access, and it must have obviously contain equipment that is relevant, that is not outdated. So we also advise that he must also check the expiry dates of the contents of that particular safety box. Now, employer moved first aid boxes closer to the employees. Example of job description forwarded to the employer so that he will be able to put in place, because normally when we go around, we also go around with specimens of contracts, so that if they have difficulties in terms of drafting employment contracts, they can just use that specimen or blueprint. Moving forward to now, the group two at the farms, which were also led by different delegations. The first farm that was visited by group two was Eetvlucht Farm. In terms of labor relations contravention, the issue of proof of payment for UI and CWEDA to be sent to the inspector, tendering inspector does not reflect that lunch overtime and finish time. So it was a bit difficult to even make sense of that, so we then raised that with them. In terms of OHS, with the farm older than 60 years, the following was recommended: introduction of a steel door to strengthen the fire risk assessment, corrective action, proof of payment was submitted in terms of those hours that I've indicated, attend register was also corrected. So by the time we left, we had seen those. Moving on, Vera and Lord Seller. Labor relations contravention, Lord is a seller with three employees, no inspection conducted. In terms of corrective, obviously there will be none. There were no OHS issues that we found. It's quite a small farm. CF Fontaine, I'm moving forward, CF Fontaine Farm in Robertson.
It's a small farm and no inspection was made. Or is it because there was no one on the farm, so we couldn't do an inspection?
Yeah, we couldn't, yes, that's correct. We couldn't do an inspection here because, I mean, there was... The issue around three employees is the information, but however, because there was really no one to talk to, so we couldn't necessarily do an inspection there.
Yeah, but you see, the way you wrote it here, it sends a wrong message. It's not telling about what has happened.
Yes, correct. We'll, thanks, Shepard. We'll put it in our appropriate.
Okay.
Yes, thanks. So that's basically the status of that particular farm. And then CF Fontaine Farm, labor relations, there were issues around concerning pay, clause 6 of the sectoral termination 13, written particulars of employment, clause 9 of SD 13. Corrective action here basically is about unemployment insurance contribution paid the day before the UI contribution was paid the day before the inspection. Moving forward, Karina.
Just wait again. This detail, why is this little detail a day before? Because it created an impression that it was just made for window dressing, and after that it did not have it. That is the message it sends to my mind on matters of compliance. I mean, if somebody is complying, yes, they are complying. When did that complaint, if it's an issue, then we put it as an issue and then it will be explained how did it happen. I don't understand if you have more to explain about it. What do you really mean?
May I just give clarity on that too. Maybe let's start from the liberation contravention. It's the information containing data, that's the issue. However, in terms of probing and trying to find information, we are then presented with information that indeed this matter, I mean, contributions were paid a day before we went. Yes, indeed it would imply that maybe, I cannot say for a fact, maybe the farmer then moved past, knowing that maybe we'll then be visiting the farm. But moving forward in terms of compliance, obviously, in terms of follow-up inspections, those are the issues that we're looking at, because our interest is consistency and compliance each time moving forward. So we'll be making notes as we move forward in terms of that particular.
That doesn't sound very well with me. Because we went to this area, you realize that this penitent has just paid the weather a day before. And this report we're getting, this engagement is about what follow-ups, what did we get on the follow-ups. We are not getting a report of the visit of the farms. What do we want is what happened after our visit. We were supposed to have gone back to the area after 90 days, I think so. And many 90 days have gone. So when you went back to this farm, what did you discover? Because if somebody was owing, if people have been working for 7 years and the employer has only paid the UIF yesterday, it would mean then that this person owes so many years of UI. Isn't it like that? And what are we getting here? Or maybe let us notice and then say, after this input, but I think if there's something that doesn't change, it doesn't stop members from raising their hands and saying, let us know this one, we will need more explanation. Thank you very much. Honorable Masemula.
Thank you. Maybe you need to rephrase. You are also confusing me. Maybe you need to rephrase.
We'll come back to this matter.
Thank you, Chair. Karina Labri Farm, with regards to labor relations contravention, there was nothing there. We only noted OHS contravention. Here, the employer needed to label all distribution boards in the workshop. The distribution board is the electricity board in terms of what does this pin mean and what is it for. Also to install eye wash and shower facilities at chemical store, and also employer to wash the PPE used for chemicals, personal protective equipment used for chemicals, corrective action in terms of wages, employer complied with notices issued, first aid kit was then corrected in terms of what needed to be in the first aid kit, levels were rectified in all PPE laundry done by the employer. We've given him the same advice as we've given everyone in terms of the employees not washing the gear themselves. That's basically in terms of Karina. Moving forward, Hodein Farm in Rosendorf, there were no labor relations contraventions there. We noted the issues around the service of fire extinguisher. Normally when you go to a workplace, you have to check the last date when the fire extinguishers were serviced and the next date for the next service. Also, the issues around providing first aid signs, the name of persons in charge of the first aid box, so that all other employees will then know exactly who's responsible for that. In case they have emergencies, who to talk to. Again, here, as indicated, like any other farm, employer to wash contaminated chemicals on the equipment used by employees when doing the spraying. Also the provision of eye wash and shower facilities after they have used, or rather they have worked in the field so that they can wash off the chemicals. Also to provide chemical PPE free of charge and replace when necessary. Here we emphasize the point that the protective gear needs to be provided by the employer. There should be no deductions or they shouldn't be buying it themselves. Employer to provide suitable breathable masks for chemicals we had found that as much as there were masks there, but the ventilation in terms of those masks was not good, because the argument that was made was that we provide but they are not using. And then we had to test the actual masks themselves, and we found that they actually can suffocate, so they needed to use the good one. Now, for corrective action, first aid signage corrected and person identified for face aid box were provided. And then contaminated PPE, personal protective equipment, now laundry done by the employer. Water and proper eye wash was provided, now provided, is in existence, and PPE provided to employees free of charge. So those are the corrective measures that have been put in place. Wolvenberg Farm in Rothenville, where in terms of clause 6.689 of the sectoral determination, basic conditions of employment act, UI, QUEDA, pay slips not properly done, contracts of employment were also outdated with regards to this particular farm. Same again with OHS, contaminated chemicals, protective gear needed to be washed by employer. Employer to provide chemical gear, protective gear, free of charge at place when necessary. We have found that even though there is protective gear, but by just a mere look at the protective gear, you could actually indicate the age of that particular gear, and some of it was even porous, which basically means the chemical could just seep through to the body. And also the issue of service of fire extinguishers, an issue that we've also noted based on the days reflected on the fire extinguishers themselves. And also the employer provides shower and eye wash facilities for employees using chemicals, also to provide tractor protective overcoats on machines, and keep separate records for compressors. Now, corrective action that has been taken, the payslips were corrected, employer provided with correct examples of employment contract so that they can be up to date in terms of what is expected in a contract of employment that needs to be signed or that needed to be signed. Occupational health and safety protective gear was corrected and provided. Fire extinguishers were also serviced, emergency eye wash provided, and the tractor had undergone maintenance service, the covers were then restored. So that's the status of Wolvenberg. Moving forward to Weizenrecht Trust Farm, Liberty Nations related contraventions was on proof of payment for UI, unemployment insurance contributions, to be sent to the inspector, a deduction for rent and groceries to be checked by the inspector as it appears to be more than 10%. I think here that's where the farm worker also had a store, and employees were then purchasing from that particular store. But I'll talk to the corrective action. OHS contravention, environmental regulations for workplace, section 6, housekeeping. Every employer shall keep every indoor workplace clean, order and free of chemicals, tools and similar things which are not necessary for the work done in such a workplace. Corrective actions with regards to the third one, corrections made with regards to deductions, as I've indicated that when we looked at the deductions on the pay slip and when we wanted to find out what are the deductions about, we then explained to say we then take some groceries and then the farm then deducts, and we're then looking at the percentage, and that was corrected. With regards to OHS housekeeping measures were put in place. Chemicals were correctly organized, as I've indicated, with other farms in the chemical room. Obviously, there needs to be enough space, must be ventilation, and then must be demarcation in terms of different chemicals. And the hygiene activities were in place, especially after working with chemicals. That is the issue of how one is to clean themselves up. Moving forward to Swart Valley Farm, with regard to labor relations contraventions, there were contracts, but they were not signed. Family responsibility leave not stipulated in contract. Hour rate not reflected on pay slip. So there was a concern there. With regards to wages, gas bottles must be properly caged or chained. We found that they were just sitting without being secured so that no one can interfere with them or have access to them. That obviously could lead to danger even there. Secondly, material safety data sheet not available in the chemical showroom. The chemical, the data sheet for chemicals is basically an inventory that tells you what chemicals are in there and when they came in, etc., etc. So it's an inventory. That was not there. Fire extinguishers not serviced on time. That I've already indicated it has to do with the date. And also, obviously, you don't only look at the date, you also look at the gauge, the green and the red gauge, that tells you exactly the compression in that particular fire extinguisher. Corrective action, contracts of employment were corrected. A material safety data sheet were obtained and kept on file so that anyone at any point in time can look at them and see them. Gas bottles were then shamed and caged and kept safe. Moving forward to Morgan Road Farm in Woosa. In terms of labor relations contraventions, issues around contracts, payslips and attendance registers that did not comply, specifically when you look at deductions to be clarified and deductions when needed to be clarified by the inspector, because the way they were written, we couldn't know exactly what the actions were about. And with regards to chemical store, that was not compliant. First aid equipment was readily available. However, after consultation with workers, the OHS unit will revisit the farm to further engage the employer on issues such as protective gear and the development of a proper risk assessment. Those are the issues that I've indicated that you normally find out when you do your administration in terms of looking at the books as well and the risk assessment documents. Correct action, contracts, payslips and attendance registers were corrected, deductions were clarified by the inspector. So everything was then corrected and clarified. St. Malo Farm, I think we've got a good one here. St. Malo Farm in Wellington, with regards to labor relations conventions, in terms of employment equity, section 36, UI and quota registration clarification, we also noted those. With regards to OHS, there is the issue again of affixing the name of the person in charge of the affixed box was not there. We needed to also, we spoke about provide free of charge protective gear. Employer washing of protective gear, the area where this is supposed to be done. And there was also a need for a roof to be fixed and also they needed to put attention to the fence that looked like they were not really affixed properly. They looked a bit wobbly. That meant that you could easily fall on top of the workers in there. And also the issue of label on distribution boards, the electricity boards on the wall. Ensure employees use shower facilities after spray chemicals. But with this one in particular, it's the argument that is made to say we do have the facilities, but they don't want to use the facilities. And then the problem that we had was that the employees then go home with the spray. And we emphasize the point that it is the employer's responsibility to ensure that they wash. It's not a question of choice. It was a question of mass. So those were the discussions that we had with the employer. And also we looked at lower all fire extinguishers to a safe height. The fire extinguishers here, I'm not a very tall man, but they were quite higher than myself, and I also tested if I could take them off, and it was going to be very difficult for even myself to use a fire extinguisher in a case of fire. So we then recommended that they lower to a proper height. Ventilate crash and provide emergency exit. As much as the employer is providing crash facilities, however, the room in which the kids were provided with these services, there were no windows. Secondly, this room was sharing space behind it was what is the ski room? Storeroom, yes. Yes. And there were a lot of iron and fans and what have you, and quite a lot of dust. So those were the issues there. Now, corrective action, the employer complies with employment equity procedural, but full review is in process. Sick leave was corrected in terms of reduction. All the notices were complied with. However, the crash facility were to be moved to a more appropriate venue with more windows. At that point when we were there, he did show us where this crash was actually moving to. So they have actually moved the crash. In terms of Velde Dacht Farm, again the EE, also the UI contribution X section 5, CREDA, and BCEA, the conditions of employment X section 31, OHS contraventions, Here, we were talking about the issue of contract band wall around the diesel tank. They have these diesel tanks, but unfortunately because they did not have a wall, normally, sometimes rather, the diesel tank might leak, and we don't want the diesel obviously to seep into the drinking water, so there must be a demarcation or a contract band wall that borders that particular tank. So we then ask them to build that that wall. In terms of employers, the washing of containment of chemicals, we also find this one A. Corrective action employment equity reports and plan were submitted. UN credit contributions was paid over to the fund. OHF notices compliant with where the employer performs the PPE, personal protective equipment and laundry services. This one, like any other firm, the point is that the employer must be the one that washes the gear or fires someone to wash the gear. And I think maybe importantly, just to mention what we also emphasized was a separate, if there is going to be a washing machine, it must be a separate washing machine solely and only for this particular protective gear. Or if there's a wash basin, because some of the employers argued that they cannot afford washing machine, we argued that they can buy a big bath and they can wash that in a particular fashion. Moving forward, colleagues and honorable members, Driefontein Farm, sexual termination certain, and EA sections were issues that we found out. I'll talk to them when I talk to the collective action as well. We also found the same thing in terms of protective gear that employees are not supposed to buy this themselves. It must be provided free of charge. Certificate of compliance for houses and workshops in terms of compliance. Also, provision of chemical training to employees that are actually handling these chemicals, the ones that issue them out and the ones that actually use them. We also emphasize the issue of immediate health evaluation for all of those that have been using this particular chemical. This was informed by the fact that we did not find information that there was indeed training. Now, our worry was, did they handle this carefully? And has there been periodical, as prescribed, periodical testing of exposure to chemicals? So we give that instruction for immediate testing. Also, employees to wash chemicals, clothing of employees, I think it's the same as the other firm. Label all distribution boards, the electricity board. Cover all loose wires at steam cleaner. Normally, the plugs, you'll find that the wires are actually protruding between the plug and the wires. They must be supposed to be tightly covered, so we also ask them to correct those. Corrective action, salaries are corrected. Pay slips are now being issued to workers. Electrical wiring and distribution mainly were corrected. That was immediately easy to do. Employers perform the PE and laundry. So that's what has been corrected at this one. Selkamut Farm in Wellington. Here, in terms of LRA, information concerning pay, in terms of proceeds of the electoral determination setting, written particulars of employment in terms of contract, that's what we found out. They needed to be cleared and be correctly spelled out. In terms of OHS, development of risk assessment, we needed that so that they follow a clear risk assessment procedure. Section 17, establishment of appointment of health and safety representatives and committees. This was not in existence. Corrective action here, payslips and attendance registers were corrected. New updated contracts was issued to the employer. Employer complied with UI and Equida. The firm is to be re-evaluated again in the production season to evaluate the risk assessment. This also applies to the other firm that I've already indicated that you need to be in season and being, you know, at work for this to be seen in action. So we will be following up on that in this particular season. Delafontein, moving forward, honorable members. Delafontein Farm, Labor Relations Act contravention that were found here. Information concerning pay again, written particulars of employment. In terms of OHS, development of risk assessment again, chemical training to employees, employees using chemicals to undergo immediate health evaluation, because we also found out that they have been working without necessary training. Therefore, for us to be able to put proper mechanism they needed to be tested so that we knew exactly what to do moving forward. Employees towards chemical clothing for employees. Labor relations, employer compliance, the establishment where to be revalued with regards to risk assessment. This will also be the season so that we can see it in motion. Now, there were recommendations, Honorable Chair, that were made based on this particular visit and investigation. Now, we're seeing through training and skills advancement through the Department of Labor. Now, that needs to be done because if there's no training, obviously, of the farm workers, then there is serious problems and exposure. Secondly, they should strengthen its occupational and health safety inspections to conduct complete inspections on the farm. That is now what we recommend that needs to be done. And most of this have already been put in place. But I'll also, when the chief inspector comes in terms of how and where the department is moving in terms of the inspectorate, I think we'll also emphasize on those particular issues. Here we say in terms of resources, the training and development of our inspectorate is a continuous process, and over the year, a number of initiatives have been put in place in order to address this. Among these initiatives for the current financial year include training to be conducted to improve the investigative ability of occupational health and safety inspectors. Moving forward, developing a leadership program that will seek to bring all inspectors who are not already at that level, at least up to NKF level 5. This will take cognizance of the recognition of prior learning. Here, I think the issue is about ensuring that we have a competent inspectorate and also addressing the past in terms of moving forward. To say those that are necessarily in the system that needs to move forward needs to be put in par, so that we can be an inspectorate that can be reckoned with. And also there should be training on legal inspection interpretation facilitated by the Justice College. As members might know that we also appear as inspectorate in labor court, where we currently rely obviously on our legal department at head office, but obviously we need to ensure that we have an inspectorate that is able to also take up this legal matter as well. Therefore, Justice College will be able to assist us in ensuring the level of competence that we require. Recommendations moving forward to economic sectors vary and are faced with numerous different challenges that require precise interventions. We operate in a very diverse environment and we cannot use a one-size-fits-all in dealing with different sectors within the ambit within which our inspectorate in the Department of Labor works. As you know that we obviously guard or enforce different pieces of legislation and we operate within different ambits of our country. Now when conducting inspections, it is important that inspectors understand challenges of the sector and are equipped to deal with them in order to improve the quality of inspections. Because indeed, we do inspections, we've got a whole range of programs in terms of inspections. We have national blitzes where we tackle all the necessary needs of the department in the country, but also provinces, the 9 provinces have their own provincial programs where they conduct inspections, and we strive by all means to also improve quality. But this training, obviously, that is put in place, and the restructuring, as you know, there's a number of elements that we are embarking on. We've got Project Shanduka now that's talking to this. At some point, ILO has visited South Africa, and our province is in ensuring that we bring the quality of inspection up to par. Therefore, the department should speed up the specialization dispensation of inspection and enforcement, especially in the vulnerable sectors such as agriculture and domestic, etc. That will also include your security sector. The department is in the process of finalizing job description in each specialization category, including specializing in agriculture, domestic and security sector, as the demand of compliance differ per sector. Because normally even when we also do our own compliance levels, after we've conducted our police inspections, because we've got the period, as the Honorable Chairperson has indicated, the 90-day period. Because after 90 days, then we check the level of compliance. But for us to ensure the level of compliance obviously increases, will be dependent on the quality of inspections that are done, but more so in terms of how we engage our employer in terms of understanding what is expected of them. So that continuous interaction with them obviously will help in terms of increasing the level of compliance. Second, OHS will also be categorized according to areas of specialization or speciality, construction, engineering, etc. As members might know, we do have high-risk sectors in the work that we do, and we also need to ensure that we are very clear on how we're going to respond to this. The department should also focus on quality inspections, which focus on a holistic assessment of the working environment, as opposed to inspections, which focus on administrative compliance. Honourable members will recall in the many cases that they've engaged on or be part of where we've been around with them. We classify our inspection in terms of the first part. We send some inspectors to the house or the office where they do administration, and then we send some inspectors to the OHS, and then we send others to do general inspection. So basically what we're saying, we should not necessarily concentrate more on administrative compliance, but we should concentrate obviously on substantive compliance, specifically when we go to the issues of specialization and also ensuring that the vulnerable sectors and also those particular specializations that we mentioned, that we also up our game in that respect. Moving forward, to the next slide, inspections are conducted in a holistic approach, and therefore the inspectorate has moved away from only following a checklist taking exercise to consider all areas of non-compliance. Before, our inspectors used to have a prescribed checklist, which was actually abandoned. I think in the past financial year or two, we've abandoned the checklist, and we are saying we need an inspectorate or inspectors that are more involved and more interactive with the work that they do and our clients, obviously, as opposed to just taking that, complying with this and that and that and that. So basically looking at both quantitative and qualitative way of doing our inspections. Therefore, the mention of the number of training institutions that are going to ask them to assist us with this. And obviously, recognition of prior learning will help us in terms of ensuring that we then are able to send our inspectors to relevant training in terms of the WSP or workplace skills plan that we have in the department. Moving forward, provincial office across the country has working relationship with all relevant government departments and agencies so that these matters are reported through this structure. Honourable members will recall in January when we had our inspections, we kept on indicating a couple of things, and one of those issues in terms of housing, we mentioned that we need the expertise of Department of Settlement in terms of housing at the farms. We also indicated we need intervention from Department of Environmental Affairs, specifically when it talks to the quality of the water that is being provided, because when we go as inspection, we look whether there is running water. However, in terms of the quality of checking that water, you need our expertise, and they fall within another department. And that collaborative approach will assist us in ensuring that we have a better outcome in terms of what we desire as an inspectorate. And moving forward to the next slide, having noted complaints from the farm workers about the conduct of Department of Labor inspectors, the committee therefore recommended the Department of Labor should urgently address the code of conduct of inspectors when conducting inspections. Honourable Chair, if you recall, after we had a press conference after this visit, I had indicated that in the last year, in the financial year, we had a inspectorate conference in East London where the code of conduct was actually adopted and endorsed. So indeed, the inspectorate does have a code of conduct. As you might also realize, we have these green cards, we've got uniforms, and we are saying that, you know, also gives that texture and feel of the type of an inspector that we want, but the code of conduct obviously guides in terms of what we expected from our inspectors, and they follow the particular code of conduct. And we hope moving forward we'll see an improved or a marked improvement in terms of the complaints that we are seeing. And I think it is also most important to mention that we also emphasize to our inspectorate to say when they go to do farm visits, they are there to go to do work. I know some of them get a bit excited and think maybe they can buy grapes at a cheaper price, but we're saying in as much as the intentions are not covered, but the impression that is given is not right. So that must come to an end. We have indeed put a stop to that, to say if they want to purchase anything at a cheaper price, they can go there at their private time. A code of conduct for labor inspectorate was developed and vindicated, and this was communicated through roadshows through different provinces by the chief inspectorate office. Norms and standards have been developed and how inspections are to be conducted, are to be conducted. In actual fact, this is not a new thing. It's our everyday, kind of every year kind of exercise to review and look at norms and standards, because they also assist us in terms of how we then assess the work that has been done by the inspectorate. The implementation thereof is a process that is continuously being assessed by the provincial offices and the relevant business units. The business unit managers or deputy directors, they have monthly meetings at our head office where they discuss these matters and seek to see how we can then improve. And these matters are also taken by the chief directors for provinces in their meetings with the head office management in ensuring that there is monitoring continuous improvement with regards to this matter. So indeed we are looking at that. There is a presentation, a progress with inspectorate specialization. This is a bit of a specialized environment, and it's basically spearheaded by the chief inspectorate office. And if I may request to be dashed, Chairperson, if I may ask humbly, so if the chief inspector may take us through this particular one, he's in charge of that. Thanks, Chairperson.
Let us listen to the inspector general. Over to you, general.
Thank you, Chair, and the honourable members. Good morning. Thank you, Chair, and the honourable members. Over the years, the inspectorate has experienced a high turnover, and which resulted in the loss of requisite skills and competences. And the issues that the committee has raised, when the committee went on the oversight visits to France, and the recommendations that the committee came up with are recommendations that we have been working on for some time. And I think we're happy today to say that we have a presentation that seeks to address the issues that the committee has raised. So in our approach to inspecting, we have adopted a generalist approach to all aspects of our work, and I think that's the source of our problems. We have 15 sectoral designations, and we have 20 occupational health and safety regulations, and the expectation is that if you are inspector appointed in the department, you will be able to enforce all the sectoral determinations, and that's impossible. And that's the approach that we've been using all the years. And if you have an occupational health and safety inspector, the understanding was that you will be able to enforce all the regulations, even though you don't have the technical knowledge, because the regulations are highly technical. To be able to enforce, for instance, the electrical installation regulations, you need to know something about electrical work. So, and that's why we've decided that we'll take this approach, because it makes a lot of sense. The new sectoral determination introduced, Chair, added to the increase in the scope of work for inspectors. And as a response to this, the reorientation of the inspectorate became necessary to improve the enforcement capabilities through the implementation of specialization competency-based training. Treasury allocated us 28 million for 2012 and 2013, and the ministerial approval was obtained to create post based on the allocation letter from Treasury. And the problem that we experienced was that the letter that Treasury gave us, the allocation letter, said something else, and therefore we could not immediately implement that which we wanted to implement, which was a specialization. And we subsequently then had to engage with Treasury, where they changed the allocation letter, and therefore they indicated to us that you can go ahead and implement the specialization. And that's where we are now in the process of asking the minister to approve the creation of specialist posts in provinces, so that we can start implementing the model. The rationale behind the model first is that it serves as a departure from the current practice, where one inspector has to do everything. It provides for specialization and career pathing for inspectors. It provides for better monitoring and enforcement of the labor laws. It will enable the inspectorate to measure the impact of legislation in the areas of specialization. And as I've mentioned, detailed submission has been routed to the channels within the department to make sure that the submission is approved. As a model, this is a model that we're talking about here. Can I move on? Am I with you?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'm with you. I wanted to make sure that the chair is also with us. Thank you. This is a model that we are proposing. This model is applicable to all the provinces. What we're saying is that the province will be an inspector in the province will be headed by a provincial chief inspector. And you'll have three streams where you have employment, a stream that will deal with the employment standards, and we have statutory services, and we have occupational health and safety. And underneath the employment standards, you'll have a stream that deals with employment equity, and social security, and the basic condition of employment. And underneath that, you create an opportunity where an inspector, because we have a sectoral determination that deals with farm workers, you will have inspectors that will be specializing in the farming environment, and they will then have to know everything that is to be known about agriculture, which will make them this will enable both the department and the farming sector to have better understanding of each other. Because what happens in most cases is an inspector goes to do a farm inspection, then the following day the inspector will have to do a wholesale and retail inspection, and the next day the inspector does something completely different. So there isn't enough time to follow up on issues that are raised and per se. So what we're trying to do there is to give much more clear focus in terms of the different economic sectors per province. You will have wholesale and retail. And it's inspectors that will be dealing with private security. You have inspectors that will be looking at issues relating to hospitality. And under the occupational health and safety stream, you have inspectors that will specifically deal with construction, health and hygiene related matters, electrical, mechanical, explosives, major hazard installation, and diving. So those are the functions that we are performing in the department. However, some of those functions were not devolved to provinces. Through this, we will be able to make sure that whatever we have at head office level is replicated at provincial level, and that's what we want to achieve. Chair, with every process that we're undertaking in government, there must be a consultative process, and with every changes that we're coming up with, we have to consult, and we are in the process of consulting with both the unions and the employees in general. just make sure that we're all moving in the same direction. And generally, there's an agreement that we need to pursue this process further, and that's why we're making sure that everybody is with us. The other issue that the committee raised, which forms part of the program that we have, is the issue relating to capacity building of the inspectorate. The problem that we're sitting with, and I think we've shared this with the committee before, was that if we want to move forward, we need to make sure that we upgrade the competencies and the qualifications of some of our inspectors. And 67% of the inspectors that we have, we need to make sure that we push them from the level that they are at now, in terms of qualifications and competencies, to a level that is desirable if we want to make sure that when we implement specialization, we do that properly. So what we then did was to develop a learnership together with the PCT, and the learnership has been registered already now. The inspection and enforcement learnership is pitched at N2F level 5, as Mr. Tejani has indicated. So 150 of the inspectors, with effect from January, in fact February, will be enrolled into this program. And then 20 of the inspectors have indicated their wish to go through the RPL process, and we're in the process of engaging with PCTA so that they can facilitate the procurement of the service provider who can assist us. So we are in that process, Chair. Another issue that the committee raised was the issue relating to our ability to investigate incidences. Again, as Mr. Tejani has indicated, we're in the process of engaging with the Vets University, because they offer training to mine health and safety inspectors, which is a comprehensive training on occupational health and safety, and that involves incident investigation, risk assessment, auditing, which we're moving into now. And remember, one of the issues that the committee raised was that we need to move away from a quantitative approach to a more qualitative approach. And that means that if an inspector goes to a workplace, an inspector needs to look at a whole range of issues. And that's why we need to make sure that in terms of they acquire auditing skills and they are able to investigate incidents properly. So we are busy with the Vets University on that, and the procurement process has commenced. And the portfolio committee will then be kept updated with progress with regards to the implementation of both the specialization and the capacity building program that we have in the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Exit honorable members. The reason why we asked for this report is because there were outstanding matters that needed follow-up by the provincial office on the farms visited. And when you say issues raised, you put them all down on paper and say this one cannot be addressed by us, rather than only raise those that make some sense to you and then start leaving the rest outside of the report. There's nothing here about housing, which was a very major thing in terms of the visit. It doesn't say anything about the relationships on the farms between the farmers and farm workers. There were lots of cases. There were cases of assaults, cases of racism that were raised by some of the workers. We visited some of the farms. There were problems with the ablution section on the farms. Toilets. I wonder we're forbidding this because I think this week there are lots of conferences about toilets. But still there's nothing about one in our report. We went to this farm that is owned by the Americans, where the creche and the workers and the teachers, I mean the children at the creche and the workers were leaving themselves in the forest. There's nothing about that in this report. Where if people are to go to the toilet, they must go to another section of the farm where they hide under trees. Why is nothing not in this report? There are instances where even at the creche, adults and children were sharing the toilet. Wasn't this at St. Malo or something like that? There is no such thing. This report is silent in terms of the follow-ups, you know. We went to a farm where the containers the people were living in. We even said if there's a problem with the containers, at least somebody can put up a window so that the house can breathe. We are silent about those things. They don't appear on this report in terms of the follow-ups. There's been lots of accusations that our inspectors are sweetheart inspectors. How do we dispute that information, given that the report we get, that is written report, are silent about issues that are appearing on even research done by international organizations like the Human Rights Watch? I really don't understand what. Maybe there's something wrong with me. But I think there are lots of gaps in this report. We have talked to some farmers during our interaction with them during the visit, and there was very positive commitment by the farmers that, oh yes, of course, we'll improve on this one. We'll need support when it comes to this, and then we'll need... the farmers actually said what they needed from us to help them so that they can move forward. But we are silent on such issues. Honorable member, this is what we... in the first part of the report about farms visited, there's an appearance of an issue, I mean, that is appearing all the time, the PPE and the things of the chemicals. But we only talk about inspection, I mean health testing for workers. You only start talking about it when you're on the farm, Driefontein in Wellington. From the beginning of the report, I don't remember hearing anything about where there was contradiction of this, where workers, where there are possibilities of workers being affected by chemicals they work with. We did not recommend that there should be testing of those workers to show that people are not only bringing salaries to their families, but they are bringing worse things, they are bringing diseases there. They are bringing chemicals that affect their children. And if the parent is affected, obviously the children will be affected. I think the question of health checks, when it comes to contravention of safety, when it comes to chemicals, should be mandatory. I'm not sure how we're going to run up all these things, but I feel that if people were exposed to chemicals, we need to check if there's a damage, and if there is damage, what do we do moving forward as the department and as the affected sector? That is, I mean, we're talking about farm workers here, and chemicals are not only used on the farms, they're used even in factories. there were issues again of environmental degradation. I know we are not environmentalists, but as inspectors, if the people who are inspecting, we feel that are impacting their way of doing things is impacting negatively on the environment, what does that tell us? Shouldn't we be turning to somebody else to say, people from the environment, we noticed this thing in this area and then it needs you to go and check? There's somebody who has built a snow wall around the tank, and you can actually see that there is lots of seepage or leakage of diesel onto the ground, and that thing will definitely went with time infect water, affect water. That seepage could reach the groundwater table, and to do the testing you just have to test it below where the seepage happened. We don't seem to have done anything about it. Even when we think our strata, we don't look at those things where we can, you know, say somebody looking at matters for water, chemicals. I don't remember seeing anything on the structure about maybe it is there. I said to be corrected. I'm seeing the structure. I'm missing the structure yesterday and today. And when it's been presented, but I'm just saying that we need to look at this structure, see what else can we, because even if we do not have somebody in that particular area, the samples could be done somewhere. You can go to the Department of Water Affairs and have water tested, or even at any water board, because the water boards have laboratories where they do their tests, and there are many companies that are doing testing for soil tests, construction and many other tests that people do, where we could refer some of the samples to. But then we need to train our people in taking samples, how to take samples and all this. There were issues on code of conduct or professionalism. I'm told that you went through a roadshow, but my understanding of a roadshow, I think maybe it's different from how you understand roadshows. Roadshows to me sound like rallies, and where there'll be somebody playing music, you know, it's rallies, lots of people. For me, this is what roadshow means. Maybe, pardon me, I'm using English as my, is it my eighth or seventh language, seven and a half language? If it was sitting vendor, maybe it would have been a bit different, I'll understand it better. But roadshow, for me, means something, because I think that if you bring something like professionalism or code of conduct, you need to run workshops and seminars where people can engage. And a roadshow is not an engagement for me. It's just a promotional thing where you promote something. Please pardon my understanding of the English language. I use English as my seven and a half language. Number seven and a half. You said something about sectoral determinations. The number of sectoral determinations we have, I forgot, you mentioned it, but it skipped my mind if you could just repeat the number again. Honourable members, these are some of the comments from, let's say, Honourable Masrumule, Honourable Nyakemba, Honourable Mutau, and Honourable Funder Vestis, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I must start by, I must say I'm encouraged by the Chairperson's remarks. But that's before we develop fellow from just want to say, one should ride away, say this is encouraging, it shows there's an effort behind. It's something one can write to his old man about, going to pay it, Cape Town, right? It's something to comment about. It's an effort and should be encouraged. Mine here will be, because majority of these things are a little technical, my concern is about the entire transformation of this sector in particular. It's about the long-term process of the transformation in particular. In the Western Cape, per se, you would understand my difficulty at political level, Western Cape. If you go back and you remember, Western Cape has always been different from any other province, different from any other place. And for that matter, this is one place which is the most furthest, far away from every single area in South Africa. It's the most furthest from anything else. Western Cape, the furthest place you can ever locate in this country. And that is why it is as it is. Because it's the furthest. I thought we will do something about the long term transformation of the sector, the Western Cape in particular. Because the sector in the Western Cape is key in the economy. Long term with regard to issues like housing, transport, education, health, broader issues, health, water, education, transport, housing. You bring in home affairs, ID registration, you bring in social development, you bring in health, you bring in a number of these departments to be clusters to address working and living conditions of ordinary workers in the country. As you will understand, this is not just about workers, it's about life and death matters. Especially in the mining and agricultural sector, these are the most difficult areas of transformation in our country. So I thought one should say something about the long term. With regard to these technical matters, I think this is a reflection that there was indeed an effort to do something. It's an indication that something has been done, and it's very encouraging, it should encourage Mr. Mrutwa and my entire team. It is encouraging, for me in particular. This is what I wanted to say. The entire transformation project in the Western Cape, in this sector in particular, it should be given sometimes a priority. You see, in 1991, 1992, 1993, 1994, we were given a task to stabilize the taxi industry between Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng province. I remember you would go into this process of talking, negotiating. Every time we're just about to sign an agreement, they bring in new teams. The process gets stalled all the time. They bring in new teams every time you think you have reached agreement, bring in new teams. I'm saying this because I really can understand the role of SA when it comes to these things. Because sometimes, I don't know why you would agree when you talk to SA. And when you talk to individual farmers, it becomes another issue. When you talk to agri-SA, it becomes a smooth process. When you talk to individual farmers, it's another challenge. You will begin to get worried as to what it is that we're dealing with here. So for me, that would be the issues I wanted to raise in particular with regard to the long-term process of transformation in particular. In the sector, in the Western Cape, per se.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Masrumula. I just want to say a little bit that Honorable Masrumula was part of the team that went to the to install the farms in that part of the area. And we said when we met there that we should not make this thing a party political problem. And some of the things that were uncovered in the in our visit to the farmers, I deliberately said that they should be excluded from the report. The Nazism experiences we had, some of those were with me, and the blatant racism and hatred for black people and all this, that we were not there to look at those. So, but if we are to be pushed into a corner, then we'll have to show that this is what and what was we visited houses of Nazis when we went to the Western Cape. And when I say a Nazi, I don't mean somebody AWP. I mean a Nazi in the real sense of what a Nazi means, in the sense of the Second World War, in the sense of massacre of Jewish people, and then a communist in Eastern Europe and Europe. I mean exactly that. But we said we're not on that mission. We are on something else here. We want to carry everybody and help everybody through. So I'm just saying that when we discuss this thing, we need to have in mind what we said ourselves when we are when we're visiting the farms in the Western Cape. But members, being members of parliament, you are free to can say anything you want to say. I don't want to restrict people. I just wanted to put this thing as we start the meeting that people must know that there was this kind of a ladies and gentlemen's agreement. Thank you very much. I'm not restricting anyone. Honorable Nyakem, just ignore that I've said this, but remember that I've said it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Shabazz. Let me firstly join Honorable Masrumula welcoming the proposition, which do reflect some work done as a result of what the committee found during the oversight. The second point here is that I think what we're also expecting in some of the work that has been done, never mind that the oversight was in the Western Cape where there is a provincial office, but that provincial office, and I think that's the reason why the Inspector General and the DDG and our friend who has relocated not even to Cape Town but to Parliament. That's why they are here. I think to say on the basis of the findings of the committee, there were issues, one that was supposed to be attended to by the province, and the labor centers that are close by to the areas where the committee went to. And those of national, like the issue of housing and everything else. Once there is a housing department at the level of the provincial legislature, but I think the approach was to say this is an issue that needs to be tackled at the national level. Hence, I'm saying that was one of the explanations that the senior management coming from head office will be able to indicate whether there has already been interactions with some departments that we don't have control. I mean, remember the issue of the farming sector itself, there's a number of departments that are involved. The agriculture is also involved, land and affairs is also involved. I think, Chair, one would be happy if then there can be a comment in relation to that. With the issue of the specialization, I'm approaching retirement age, this issue being spoken to. You see, the former minister of Gladden used to say, that's why it was so and so. For you to change these things around. So the point I'm raising is that the issue of specialization is not something new. I heard about this in 2009 when I arrived here. I'm not saying it was not raised before that, but I started to hear about the issue of specialization in the expert in 2009. It appears to me, Chair, that it's not given the agency that it deserves. I think the department must speak to that as to where the difficulty is. Because this is meant to make sure that you retain the personnel that you have within the branch of the inspectorate. Because they come and go. They come in and get experience and leave. I mean, obviously, this is very serious. I think on the issue of misconduct of this contestant, I heard your comment, Chairperson, and also the response that there were road shows and encouraging inspectors if any of them offered a discount on grapes or a car that is sitting there and not being used, even inspectors that have a private car so that the car can be sold to that inspector. I think fine with the road show and the code of conduct. But what we're expecting was that with regards to investigation, remember this, we may term this as allegations that were raised by workers to members of parliament. And for members of parliament to report this and submit these reports reflecting these things is for the department to do some kind of investigation. I think we're expecting a response, Chairman, let me say. We haven't investigated, we haven't found anything, or we have found something of that nature. The other question is on the unemployment insurance deductions in the main. It's something that was established during the oversight visit. Well done to the provincial office for making a follow-up. And as a result, then now UI deductions have started. Now, I'm sitting here saying, remember, when you claim for unemployment insurance, it's not because there are deductions that started last week, so therefore you are entitled to the benefit. There are timeframes and procedures that need to be put in relation to that. So the question I have there is, if, because the oversight was in January 2012, and a worker started to work in that company years ago, before January, what happened to that period? I know that both the employer and the employee, they do contribute. Now, when the employee contributes, doesn't take money out of his pay package and go to the UIF and say, here is my contribution. I mean, in terms of the Act, it is the responsibility of the employer to commence those deductions immediately when that person is employed. Now, what are the penalties in the event where there were no deductions which are statutory deductions which the employer are obliged to do that. What has happened to that? Maybe Mkalipi may assist here. I'm referring to purchasing those deductions, the time that the employer was not deducting. I had deductions of rent and property. What came to mind is the amendments that were engaged in when we were looking at the basic conditions of employment being, saying that these other deductions, which are more and above the statutory ones, unless they reflect in the collective agreement or any law, just to freshen, I know Mkhandi, we are not talking about the amendment, but I want you to fill in a meeting too, because I can see that you will leave this meeting without saying anything.
we can do with some writing duration.
So I'm flagging this. I'm not saying in your meetings, in your engagement in the department, you are not sharing experiences and understanding that you have in relation to the labor legislations. But I think there must be a legislation that prohibits some of the deductions that we are hearing here. The last point is the we have welcomed the report, but it's not numbered. There's no number one, page two. You will see only numbers where there is cut and paste of the national plan of the inspectorate as a branch. You see it takes something towards the end. When I was counting from there, coming forward to the first page, I was quite a gentleman. Yeah, this is something else. But I think, job was done in the areas where the department has attended to. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyamu. Yeah, I'm kind of you so quiet. It's very painful. but we'll get you getting used to the day. Honorable Mudam.
Yeah, I'm sure Kalipi will come into the fray. He's already put him in. Chair, I'm going to have to try and be as concise as possible because I've got a couple of issues to raise. I'll start where Honorable Nyakemba sort of almost left off. But I'm glad now I know why he has been losing so much hair. You know, it's about the specialization thing with the inspector. That's always talked about and it's not happening. I just like to say I agree with him. It's actually the right thing to do. It should have been done. It should have been a long time ago. I'm sure you guys agree with that. Because that's how you can do that. I want to link it with the point that you gentlemen be making about the high turnover of staff in the inspectorate. The minister knows something. You guys obviously know that's my bugbear, that we need to have an adequate number of inspectors so that we can do a decent job of inspecting. So I want to see whether there's a link. No, let me ask the question differently. Have we established why the people are leaving the inspectorate and where are they going? In this new structure that we are planning, how are we going to retain these guys? Because it's expensive to train people and then lose them willy-nilly like that. Getting back to the general presentation, indeed, that's good. And I think we have taken on board the comments by the chair. I think they are all valid. For me, the important thing about inspecting anything is that you inspect, and if there are wrongs, they are corrected. And in this report, most of the wrongs are corrected. But it's also about good practice. It's about it happens as a matter of course. In other words, it becomes the practice. What are we doing to ensure that this is indeed the case? The other thing that is, and I know the inspectorate is very concerned about it, this health and safety thing, especially the health of the workers, especially those who are exposed to chemicals. You probably will all be aware we have the situation with people who have been working at our isolations at Pelidaba and stuff over many, many, many years. And these people are now sick. Because they've been there exposed to the nuclear stuff for over many, many years, and this was not arrested in time. Are there plans for us to monitor, especially guys? I read the other day there was a guy who was working on a farm for 32 years. Now, if this guy's been working with chemicals over the years, he might have, you know, had some stuff. Do we have plans to make sure that these kinds of things are arrested? In other words, the long-term implications of this. There are quite a couple of other things that I would like to do, but I'll leave it at that point. Next year.
Yes, that's the thing, actually. The turnover thing, high staff turnover. If I lose it before it, you know, it escapes my mind. Maybe it's a good thing that we train people and lose them. We can turn this thing into a very positive thing, where we put money aside to train inspectors who will go and work in the mines and other industries. That's part of our responsibility of creating jobs. We shouldn't be complaining, but maybe make sure that the ones that we have for ourselves, we up their skills and we pay them so well that no one will get them. But nothing, we should not bang our heads against the wall because we training people for other people, even if we're training them, and they go and work in mines in Australia. It's good for job creation. Let's have South Africans wait outside. They will gain experience, come here, and then we'll learn something from them. But at the same time, we'll be reducing the number of unemployed professionals in the country. Let's turn our lemons into lemonade. I think we should start here with something that we know we can do. If you lose people to somebody, that's a good one. Let's form a school. We've got money here. And the worst thing is the best thing about this is we don't have to ask money from anywhere. We've got money. And the monies that we have, these are monies of the workers that are deducted every month into the UIF, the COID and others. Let's use those monies to create jobs and train workers for the international community, for the private sector and for others. Honorable Funder President.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairman, just on a lighter note, I see Mr. Mule, Honorable Mr. Mule, is reading the biography of one of his party leaders. If you would just hold up that book. I see the title is The Racketeer. I wonder which party leader is that. Chairperson, I just want to say thank you very much for this report. I can see he's preparing for the end of the year Congress. The inspection services, I think we've just been impressed today by how important their work is. And I want to say to them, I've been on some of these blitz inspections in the Eastern Free State and here in the Western Cape, and I have been most impressed by the work that they do, but also the attitude displayed by the inspectors. Very similar to what traffic police is doing. You know, we all realize that they are extremely necessary. Without them, there would have been chaos on our roads. But fortunately, just these people don't just give tickets. They also assist. Similar to the traffic police that assist at an accident scene, these people assist in terms of conveying a lot of knowledge to employers. I recently had quite a lengthy discussion with a farmer from Franschhoek, and there was an inspector by the name of Kipidu who recently visited his farm there in the Franschhoek Valley. He said to me that it was such a positive experience. He learned such a lot. And he has been making use of a labor consultant, and yet, despite that, he felt that he learned a lot, and he was able to set the few findings right, and he feels positive about the whole experience. And that is really, to me, it was wonderful to know. There are a few things, and some of you may know, I have actually sent through quite a number of questions, parliamentary questions this year regarding the inspection services. And there are a number of things that unfortunately do concern me, as it does concern you. But one of them is, for example, the whole issue of the productivity of labor inspectors. I've been met by some labor inspectors who complain to me that they are underpaid, etc. Now, my problem is, put it to them as well, I'm convinced that, you know, your pay can be increased, but then your productivity must also increase. And in terms of a question, an answer by the minister to me in Parliament, the average number of inspections per inspector per annum is 170. To me, that is less than one inspection per day. And I've been asking questions to the inspectors as well. You know, why is it so low? Yes, there are other paperwork, there are work where we need to represent the department in court, etc. But it seems to me there are a number of things. The first one is, for example, the whole issue of transport. If you really want to go and visit a farm, quite often you need transport that is able to compete with the gravel roads, the long distances, the heat, etc. Now, the inspectors are apparently able to get a subsidy for their private transport, and also, according to an answer from the minister, this works out much cheaper for the department than the fleet that they've hired in the past, or now that the department is getting its own fleet. And unfortunately, that model, it seems to me, is tapering down. The number of inspectors making use of that private transport subsidy, also responding to a question, an answer from the minister, is decreasing all the time. It just seems to me that there is something that we need to address. The cheapest option we must use, but we must build on that. We must expand on that. The other thing is, I'm concerned about the fleet management of the vehicles, because apparently for every two inspectors there's more or less one vehicle in the office. Now that means that there needs to be careful management of the resources. One inspector will have to be dropped and the other one will have to go to a further point and pick up on the way back, etc. And I'm really concerned that this is not happening, that the management of staff, and I know it's difficult to manage staff when they're not sitting next to you in the office. When they're out there and you see them this morning and you perhaps see them tomorrow morning again because, you know, they are not in the office. Then also, and I'm not going to expand then on the stand on the career planning and the hard turnover, but I am concerned, according to the labor inspectors, the opportunities available to them for career advancement is limited. And I'm glad to hear that you are looking at that, but I really do believe that something more could have been done, should have been done in terms of encouraging inspectors who really perform well and who are productive to up their game. And then also, another thing which concerns me, and now I'm closer to the situation that we're experiencing at this moment in the Western Cape, this other country where my honourable colleague doesn't know where it is when he's sitting in it. The foreign workers, and for example, another answer has said, labour inspectors are not concerned with foreign workers. That is a Home Affairs function. To check work permits, etc., have got nothing to do with labour. It doesn't make sense to me that the two ministers must come together and that you must sign a memorandum of understanding whereby if a labour inspector finds on site that there are some foreign workers without the necessary work permits, that it will be reported to the Department of Home Affairs. And similarly, if Home Affairs goes to a working site and you probably don't need a level 5 qualification sometimes to see that the paperwork is not in order or that the working conditions is hazardous, etc., that there will be that cooperation. It just seems to me at this point in time we've got two departments that don't really speak to each other, where the staff goes out to remote locations, and I think we can strengthen the inspectorate of both these departments if we have this memorandum of understanding. Also, I would love to see your officials being equipped to be able to take things like water samples, etc., and to take it in such a way that it will be able to stand up in court when it is found that contamination has taken place of water sources, etc. So if you could just comment on that. And then also as a last one here, I think the system of labor inspectors not having enough equipment. I haven't seen a labor inspector going to a farm with a laptop and a portable printer, etc. And I don't know if that will make them their work easier. My farmer friend said to me, no, he found the copy book still very effective. It may be archaic, but he still swears by that. He said that it worked for him. But if you could just comment on is there other ways to assist these people to do their work faster, better, and to have a record that they can rely on and go back on. Thank you.
The chairperson was out and he is in the room. He has not yet come. Yeah, you are not here. The department can respond now. We won't say who must respond. You know which areas that you respond. But sometimes the inspector general used to be the first person, and then others used to follow the budget.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Of the meeting. I just wanted to respond to three questions, the broad ones and the provincial ones will go again to the provincial CDPO and the inspector and obviously Mr. Khalid has been provoked. I'm sure he is going up to that. I think that the comment by the chairperson are true that in all inspections a range of issues are raised and when preparing this presentation I think this became a big challenge as well. Now what was done was to isolate issues that are within the ambit of the department that we have legislative control over without necessarily suggesting for a moment that other issues are not important at all. And secondly, the way we tend to deal with these matters and however difficult it is that some issues are dealt with at the bilateral level. You honorable members may know the current agriculture discussions we're having within the Department of Labor and Minister of Agriculture and then the same thing with money. The minute there are crises in the areas, ministers relevant will come in. But we also have structures.
Yes, just a little bit of this because those who want to have tea are not going to break for tea because we have to have a short day, yeah? It's going to the end of the year. So we'll take some of it.
Okay.
In short, thank you.
Then there's the second level areas where we work with other departments because the legislation requires us to do so. Those will be like your justice, home affairs, police. I'm sure if our inspectors go to another area and they're denied access, then you have to call police to assist in those areas. Home affairs, the Immigration Act requires us to work with them. It's a legal obligation, especially around the irregular migrants, the question of permits, etc. There are two things here. The one is that our laws protect both regular and irregular migrants. Now, all our laws says all workers are entitled to all aspects that are covered in terms of our labor relations dispensation. The challenge is when the person is found, let's say an irregular migrant is in the country and they are owed a lot of money, but at the same time, either they are to be held at Lindela as all the other Lindela and all those kind of centers whilst their claims and payments, etc., are processed and all that. There are challenges in those areas that we must acknowledge, because in some cases people get deported before all their related aspects are resolved. And currently we are looking at ways, and because we don't have camps in South Africa, the questions that we are discussing with Home Affairs around how do you allow an irregular migrant who has been identified to remain in the country whilst all these other legal processes are still being settled. And honourable members will know that the legal processes also take their own time, and as a result there are complications. But the third area where we also work together with other departments are through
You said something that I don't think you, maybe I didn't hear you very well. You said, how do I allow a person to stay in the country when there's a case pending against them? I think that is what you said.
No. What I was saying was that you may find that there is a migrant that is irregular, that worked in a particular area. The farmer or any other employer who employed that person is involved in a case. Now, Home Affairs argument will be that the person contravening the law is irregular in the country, and therefore the person has to be deported. But at the same time, you have got a case that is pending, and some of the cases either get thrown out because the people who are supposed to give evidence and all this, by the time the case goes to court, that person is no longer in the country. So there are those kind of issues that we have raised with the Department of Justice and Home Affairs colleagues to say, you know, we need to find a solution to deal with this kind of problems, because we want to ensure that even if the person is regular, the fact is that if they were underpaid, the employer must pay them all the salaries that are due and all that, and so on. And even at the startup level, there are issues where some governments are arguing that the, you know, aspects such as unemployment insurance fund, compensation fund, should be paid to them and later be paid to their citizens. And that is why in some cases people from those countries will rather remain or come to South Africa through a visitor's permit in order to, and that is the regular migrants, in order to follow up on their UIF and so on, post their employment, etc. So those are some of the challenges. But the third area of coordination is through clusters. This is where the Department of Labor sits with the Department of Housing, Education, Home Affairs, Economic Development, Trade and Industry, and so on, in the economy cluster to discuss at the DG and DBG level aspects that are cross-cutting that affect our department. For an example, a Department of Agriculture may take a decision around an aspect that may negatively impact on the Department of Labor legislation. Now, through the clusters, that is where, when such a policy is presented, we are supposed to engage and show the contradictions and motivate why the Department of Labor would, for instance, have a different view or propose certain amendments to that policy, simply because it may impact on our legislation and end up with unintended consequences. And beyond the clusters, we do have inter-ministerial cabinet committees that also process aspects that come from the clusters before they go to cabinet. So that is the current framework of coordination. It has challenges. In some instances, things go through, but in some instances where we are able to pick up something, we are able to raise issues of coordination and all that. And like I said, others will take on a bilateral aspect. Now, also, I think there was an issue around the Department of Labor and Home Affairs not working together. I think that the coordination mechanism that I've outlined addresses that issue. I just also wanted to comment on the fleet management, this is one of the biggest challenges that we're having in the department, and hopefully when we do an update next year, we may be in a better position. Currently, we are in a transition where we are phasing out the Pavlisa fleet, which were part of the central contract, at the same time introducing our own fleet, and at the same time introducing subsidized vehicles, but also taking on the experiences that we had previously. You have provinces like Northern Cape that have got vast distances, where whether you have a subsidized car or a departmental fleet, its lifespan becomes problematic because of the distance they travel. And you have got Gauteng, which is a small province, but a vast number of companies, and the distance covered by inspectors in traveling becomes shorter. So there are certain transport trickles that requires inspectors or whoever is using subsidized vehicles to travel certain kilometers, etc. And we trying to find ways around addressing some of those aspects, both with the subsidies and the fleet. It is a challenge, but the number of initiatives related to each one of them to make sure that we are able to supply and make sure that not only inspectors, but all our officials, both at the provincial and legal center level, are able to perform their functions across the organization.
There are two issues there, Chair. The issue that was raised by Honourable Stegen, that the issue of foreign workers and inspectors. Employment Services Bill, if members pass it, is going to reinforce that kind of area of work because it's going to regulate also the employment of foreign workers, and it's going to give authority to the department and the inspector to be able to determine whether people are working through the power channel. They've got the necessary work permits and the whole works. Therefore, the Employment Service Bill is trying to close that gap also to give the department that authority in there. Although, even now, we can still work jointly with the Home Affairs, but the Employment Service Bill is going to reinforce that process. On the issue of deduction, Honourable members asked that I speak on this issue. The law presently is clear on this area that the total deduction cannot be more than a third of an employee's salary. The amendments that we're making amendments to the BCA to make sure that employees are not forced as a condition of employment to buy from the farmer. If they buy from the farmer, it should be because they want to buy from the farmer, not because it's a condition of employment. And that's the issue that we're dealing with that the law does not deal with now, because we've seen many farm workers who are forced to buy from the farmer in order for them to continue working in that farm. And that's the issue that we're dealing with. It's trying to close that loophole. But the law, as it is now, it's a total deduction. It doesn't matter for what it is. You can deduct whatever you want to deduct. If an employee agrees, if it's within the law, it's got to be not more than a third of what you earn.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with the last question that was asked. Why are inspectors provided with laptops? I think it's and other issues related to transport. I think Mr. Mokoba has dealt with the issue on transport. We have a policy on tools of trade, and that includes the cell phones, subsidized cars, and provision of computers for our inspectors. We have provided our inspectors with cell phones, and we have a policy on subsidized cars, as I mentioned. And the policy, the way it works in such a way that an inspector is not compelled to apply for a subsidized car. An inspector has to exercise his or her right to apply for a subsidized car, because there are financial obligations that the inspector needs to meet if the inspector decides to apply for a subsidized car. One, the inspector needs to make sure that he or she will be able to afford to pay the 30% which is required. And the second thing is that there are tax implications. The scheme is kilometer driven kind of a scheme. There are 10 kilometers that you have to travel per month, which is 21,000 per year kilometers. Now, one of the problems that we're sitting with is that the radius that an inspector covers, especially those neighbor centers that are in urban areas. If you have a 10-kilometer radius, there's just no way that you'll make 1,700 kilometers a month, because your responsibility is just about to do inspection around. But the question is, does that inspector not need a subsidized car? The answer is that inspector needs a subsidized car. So those are the issues that we currently dealing with as a department to make sure that we interact with the Department of Transport, because this is the Department of Transport policy. So we're interacting with them so that this policy is tailored in such a way that it suits the kind of work that we do. And we are encouraging our inspectors to apply for subsidized cars. As Mr. Motoba has mentioned, we are in the process of procuring more cars to make sure that our inspectors are able to do their work. It's the same thing with the laptops. We will be providing, we're not sure at this stage whether we call it a laptop or, but there will be a device that we'll be providing to our inspectors to make sure that when they are out, they are able to immediately send information to the office, and they will be linked to the network of the Department of Labor, wherever they are. Our understanding is that the inspectors are field workers, and therefore they should have all these tools. There was a question on why the inspectors are leaving and where are they going. It's quite an interesting question, Chair, because we train them, they leave, and they go to other government departments. Public Works is a key quota for our inspectors. And also private companies, because the reality is we cannot match the salaries that private companies are offering at our inspector. We can provide an environment in which we enable them to stay and develop career-wise, but in terms of the salaries that are offered by private companies, we will not be able to do that. And the professionalization seeks to provide that kind of environment so that they can stay. So they go to other government departments and to the private sector. Why they leave? For greener pastures. And we're hoping that now that we have clarified issues of career pathing, that you can start as a general inspector and make your way up to become a chief inspector, and that is clear now. We're hoping that they will be able to stay. I agree with the honourable member that with regards to improving the performance of the inspectors, we have to do that. However, we need to understand the difficulties that the inspectors work under, and already the members have talked about the issue of tools of trade, and that's the reality that we're sitting with. We're competing with other government departments. If you go to Treasury, and already Honourable Member Nyegem raised the issue of that he's been here for a long time and he's about to retire now, and we have not implemented specialists. And the reason is simple. We didn't have money for it. And we kept on going to Treasury and say, we think this thing makes business sense, and we think that it's going to improve the way we do things. And ultimately, Treasury agreed. And that's why now we are in the process now of implementation, because we now have we have money, little as it is, but I think it enables us to kickstart the process, and we continue going to Treasury and saying we need more to be able to do this. So I'm sure that by the time you leave, Honorable Member, we would have made a substantial progress on this. The Honorable Chair raised the issue of the code of conduct and the fact that we had road shows. I think, Chair, it's just a question of semantics. You're right when you say it's the seventh language. In our case, what we're saying is that in the road shows, we discuss. We're using the term road show because we, as Xhosa City Bazalala, we go to all the provinces. We're on the road. That's what we mean. But the intention, Chair, was to say to the committee that we've spoken to the inspectors. We had workshops on this matter, and there was an agreement, and support for the code of conduct inspector. And for that matter, Chair, if I may say, we have used the code of conduct. We have disciplined inspectors who have been allegedly involved in shady deals and practices, and we've investigated and we found that in some instances the allegations were true, and some of the inspectors were dismissed. And we had situations where some of the inspectors were acting as both an inspector and an advisor to construction companies, and we've dealt with situations like that. So the code of conduct is made in such a way that it forms part of the disciplinary procedures of the department. I think the Honourable Member raised the issue of whether we're able to go to companies and deal with issues of exposure to chemicals. The report that we have provided, it indicates that in some instances there were issues that were picked up. And I think the Chair also raised the issue that we did not include issues related to pre-employment screening and periodic medical examination. That we are able to force the employer to do, because it's a requirement in terms of the hazardous chemical substances, that if an employee is exposed, but firstly the employer needs to, we need to establish the occupational exposure limit and the occupational exposure recommended limit. If the employer, if the exposure is above that, we need to make sure that we do something about it so that the employer can then subject the employee to what we refer to as a periodical medical examination to monitor the continuous exposure to the chemical. And the member is right, some of the exposure to chemicals sometimes is got a latent effect. And therefore it's important that the pre-employment screening is done from a very well go thing going to the school. So we're able to do that, and we have people that are competent to be able to provide that kind of service. We have what we refer to as the health and hygiene inspector. They've been trained to measure different stressors, chemical, biological, and physical stressors. So we do have people like that. And that's why you see in the structure that we presented that we want to make sure that even provinces have those kind of competences. And most of the competences are sitting at the head office in our office. And as Mr. Mugrotoba has mentioned, we do work with other government partners, especially environmental affairs partners and Department of Health on whatever issues that we picked up that we feel that they are not within our area of jurisdiction as a department. We refer those issues to those departments, because we believe that we are all government departments and we have to have the same book. I just want to touch on the issue around the farming environment. We have, in the past, the minister signed together with stakeholders, a vision for labor relations in the farming sector. And that document was, the signing of that document signified the commitment that government and stakeholders, both farming farmers and the unions, were making in terms of making sure that there will be issues relating to housing, transport, water, education, and labor relations in general will be complied with. And what we see now let me put it this way, flowing from that document, there's a document which is called a protocol document that Agri SA and TAU came up with, which according to them sought to give effect to this vision for labor document. However, our experience is that this protocol document is actually making life very difficult for us as inspectors, because the farming community is actually using that document to prevent inspectors from gaining access to funds. And this is the issue that we have discussed with AgriSA and continue to engage farmers and the farming community on this issue, because the law is very simple. In as much as we have to make sure that we deal with issues of security, we need to make sure that we are able as inspectors to discharge our responsibility in terms of the law. That's the issue, Chair, that I wanted to add, and my colleagues will deal with other issues that I have not touched on.
Thank you, Chair. I think most of the issues have been covered, but I think from a provincial point of view, we just want to to the House with regards to the issues that we found out. I mean, the chairperson spoke about relationship issues, racism issues. I think it is important that we mention that when we do our both proactive or reactive inspections, or even blitzes, we also emphasize the issues around LRA, Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and obviously in terms of the administration that we do, they have to have their own human resource policies and procedures, which we emphasize that they need to follow, because obviously that becomes a local issue in terms of internship, which is a contract between an employer and employee. But we do emphasize that, but that's an issue that they need to handle. And also I think what is important as well, with regards to foreign laborers who do not necessarily have papers, I think Mr. Mokoba has indicated that irregular migrants. Yes. I think from our side, I think it's important to mention that we work very closely with the Home Affairs, Department of Home Affairs, Public Protector and Human Rights Commission. Because specifically when we do all this, is we request a green certain barcoded, certain digit barcoded ID. And in instances where they don't have, obviously they'll be indicating that they are still waiting for their papers to be processed, etc., etc. And the Home Affairs and Public Protector and the Human Rights Commission have clearly indicated that we need to be sensitive around those issues, because most of the irregular migrants do not necessarily want to go back to their consulate, etc., etc., because immediately you do that, they are being deported. So we engage them on these issues in terms of how we handle them. So just to emphasize that we were very close with them. And going further, just to mention that with regards to follow-ups that the chairperson has indicated, in terms of the blitzes that we've conducted, obviously the one that we found out, we have, like for example, in a presentation you might have noted where information still needed to be followed, forwarded to the inspector, and it was rectified. That would have been the follow-ups. But in terms of what we've done, because of the elements that I've already mentioned, in terms of the number of inspectors that we have that needs to cover work, what do we do in terms of the proactive and reactive inspections, and also provincial blitzes and national blitzes that we have? We just integrate that work as it goes along, rather than going back to the whole project, because in terms of resources, it becomes problematic. But we do not necessarily forget about the work that we've done. So as we do work, we also engage in those. But in instances where everything was fine at that point in time, we do not necessarily make a follow-up immediately. Obviously, it has to come in a second round. And with regards to the chemical aspect, maybe the report that created a problem, where we, in farms where there were indeed concerns regarding protective gear, where there was no training of people that are using chemicals, obviously the recommendations necessary to me. But there are indeed farms where there's a person designated in terms of taking care of the first comer, trained, and they're doing the right job. That we know that there is compliance. So there's not necessarily a need for a follow-up to check, but as we go along, obviously those are the things that we check. And I think the proposal has been made that the chief inspector has noted in terms of moving forward in terms of the program that we're going to do, how we're going to deal with those issues of ensuring that health and safety are adhered to. I don't know if the issue is from the side.
No, I got there's just one little thing here. It doesn't matter whether you are trained or not. If you are not given masks to protect yourself, whether trained or not, you'll be affected by the chemicals. You know, because it's about exposure. Because if this chemical is bought, somebody has to use it. And it got used in the past. That's why the employer actually went to buy more chemical, because the last one was used. And it was used by people who are not using safety clothes. That is where the screening comes into play. You don't screen people because they did not get training. You screen them because you think they are exposed.
I understand. Let
us make sure that we do that and we record them correctly. There was a question of turning our lemons into lemonade. We did not talk about it. Whether don't we see this thing as an... Maybe we talked about it when I was on. Don't you see there's an opportunity to train inspectors for the departments as part of dealing with matters related to jobs in the country? Maybe it was answered then. I might have missed that part of the comment when I was outside.
Chair, I did mention that we do train inspectors and they leave. And I understand your question is that we're contributing to skills development. However, it leaves us bleeding, and that's the other fact. But we continue to train. One of the things that we do, that we have in the department, is a program called the Learner Inspector Program, where we take...
Can I say just, I'm not really stopping you. I'm saying that... We still treat as a negative. That's what I'm saying.
No, Chair. All what we're saying is that in as much as we appreciate it, that we contribute it. Because when they leave, they go to other companies and they make a difference in those companies. However, it leaves us bleeding because we continuously have to start from scratch. But it's the nature of life, and we agree that it has to happen. And we're also saying, for instance, the program that we have, which is a learner inspector program, where we take matriculants and we take them to university and they study engineering, all the disciplines, engineering disciplines. And on completion of that, their studies, they are required to stay with the department for a period of 3 years. If they are not absorbed in the department, they are free to go and join any other company of their choice. So that's another way in which we're contributing to skill development, and we'll continue to do that. However, the only way in which we can make them stay, I made a point that we cannot match the salaries of the private sector and all that. But if we create an environment in which they stay in the department, it is actually going to be much better for us, because it means that we're not continuously having to start from scratch. But we appreciate the value that we, the benefit that we're giving, and the value that we're adding towards the skills development of our country. That's the positive spin to it.
Stop complaining about it. Because you complain about it all the time, and it seems like it's a problem to you. You know, rather than putting it as a positive, we've got inspectors, they just don't stay long with us, but we are sending them to other areas, and our work is to train inspectors and give them experience and send them out in the field. But I think that is beside the point. Let's not, we can't overemphasize this matter. But you see, you make it sound, because we listen to you complain, if you say we have this thing and you put it as a negative, as a challenge, then we start looking at solutions. Drink more. You've got money. No. Okay. Maybe there's something I'm missing. And, you know, you remind me of this guy who failed, was it Form 3? And he was a street fighter, see, and he went to the teacher and said, how do I fail when you are teaching? Just explain to me, how did I fail? You've been teaching. Honorable Masrumu, I've seen you, you've seen this, but still there are gaps, you know, so.
I just want to find out if we have a policy, even if the policy whether is there an idea or a solution or whatever we have for it. Say if we are in a different environment, say for instance soccer play. If you loan a player from me, don't we have that kind of agreement? How much are we going to? Something like that. I'm saying, I mean, if you were to take my inspector, whether temporary or permanent, don't we have to get into a particular agreement in terms of money sent? I mean, this is my, in a way, even if, without seeing it between fringe and temporary, individuals' rights, choice, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, things like that. Not tampering into that. Don't we have that kind of an idea? It's even wake up, it's unthinkable. But if you take my respect, permanent or temporary, shouldn't we get into an agreement? Because I train this person, I invest in this person. Don't you have to get into an agreement for a particular way of doing things? Like moonlighting, for instance, is relevant. Moonlighting. If you are moonlight, I'm a policeman, I can go into that company, work for 24 hours that day, that night, get a little cash out of that, something like that.
Comrades, I think this shows that we need to go to talk more about inspection, because you know, inspection is the face of the department. What all is said and done. We went, it was not long time ago, where a farmer or a company got in the farming industry got fined millions for non-compliance, and we don't even understand what that whole thing is all about. Nothing was explained to us. Of course, we didn't ask for whatever information. That is very detailed, because I was asked by somebody, he wanted me to talk about this thing in the radio, and I said, no, okay, go talk to the department, I don't know about this thing. This is what they do on a daily basis. They issue fines, and you don't expect them to tell me about each and every fine that they issue, you know. But I think on matters that are of national interest, sometimes it would be nice if you know, something could be given as an extra note to members. There is this thing that is in the media. This, you know, of course, it's our responsibility to do research on our side, on our own, but why go out and search for information that is available at home, you know? But part of the research is to request for that information. But I think, again, too, that it should be the responsibility of the department, again, to keep the members abreast of what is happening in the... You know, if we, you see, some members of the committee, I think, we serve like some sort of board of directors. If we were to push it, you know, as comparison, that, you know, you've got to know what is happening, but at the same time, the company has to tell you if there is a potential crisis or a whatever thing, you know. But I'm just saying that we need to keep each other wired about what is happening, you know. But we need to have time where we talk about inspection. and we cannot do it now in this sitting because we're not going to be able to do justice to the, particularly the new structure. And not just the structure, because the, whenever this problem, usually people will look at the structure when the problem is not exactly the structure, it could be something else, it could be skills. It could be the overall objective of what we want to achieve through this. It could be many other things. It could be systems that we're using, you know, of managing the inspectorate or generally our modus operandi, you know, the and capacity of management to differentiate and between the provinces and apply their minds and give advice and take decisions, whether popular or unpopular decisions. Because if we have a problem with distances travel and there are restrictions in terms of the law, then we'll be forced to bring to, if you want to address the question of transport, then we'll end up doing the, something that is not a, very smart to do. And say, because you want people to travel long distances, you'll get inspectors who hire them, who will be operating from garages in the middle of nowhere, so that they can be not, so that they don't have to travel very far. You know, so you must be staying somewhere in the middle of Bofader and between Bofader and Kalkumfontein, so that you don't have to travel 700 kilometers a week. You know, it is not going to be helpful, you know. But I think we need to engage people and always scratch the surface to check what is actually the real problem. But I'm just saying the numbers, let's not go deeper into the new inspectors, but we need to have time where we go really go to town about it. Honorable Nekembo.
Yes, sir. There's a question that I think they have missed. If it was during the question, the oral question time in the House, I was going to think that it would be responded in writing. The issue of the deductions on unemployment insurance. It was in terms of this, the page where it says deduction started yesterday. The question was, what about the other days before yesterday? Lastly, sir, is if the department had a lot of money, the specialization, the model that was put there should have been in place long time ago.
We don't want you to be part of the celebration. So we want you to go first so that we can. Inspector General.
Chair, I was just whispering to Mr. Tejani that the provincial chief inspector has not said a word. So let me give him an opportunity to make his maiden speech, if the chair allows.
More like no, this can't be a maiden speech, it will be a vigil speech.
Thank you, sir. In reality, correct that the reductions should be retrospective from the date when the person was employed. And our inspectors are trained in such a way that when there is an outstanding reduction, it should then be reflected from the day the person became employed. That's the first part. The second part is that the overall responsibility then becomes that of the employer and not merely of the employee. So if those monies were outstanding, all those monies had to be paid by the employer. But what we will do is, in this instance, because we have the date, we will now go back and reflect on our records to see whether it actually does reflect that date. Because that's the important date. Should the person become unemployed, that's the date from when we should make the payments. Exactly.
Yeah, but you know, it's not only that. We're not only going to go to that farmer. And what it should tell us is that in instances where people started paying the UI very late, it should apply, you know, to all of them, not necessarily this particular farm. Because then it will become like, oh, we are targeting this poor farmer. Further things about correcting a wrong and making sure that the right things get done.
You earlier on you mentioned the case that appeared on the newspapers. One of the issues is a claim relating to non-payment of a UI contribution for years, and we recouping that money now. You both UI and compensation contributions.
My guess was very good. What?
The issue that raised by Honorable about whether is there no way of recouping the money from the other employer if he's trained just like soccer. In the labor market, I thought that what you could do, you could lock the individual in the contract. If the department pays 100,000 for me to get training for whatever area, the department then can lock me in an agreement that says you can't leave before 3 years. In the department, so that you put back what we invested in you, but you can't charge the other company that's not in the labor market. We can't do that, but you can lock the employee and say to the employee, if you leave before 3 years, then they invest the money. But then if the employee doesn't have the 300, you know, sometimes to sue for bad money using good money when they do not have the money, you're not likely to get it. It becomes a hassle to even get the money, and those are the problems around that. But you can't judge that the employer because they do not ask you to train for them.
Honorable Mazrumu, I think we are going towards the end of this meeting.
My name is just an appeal to report on the court. To you in particular, is to say, you see, we are towards the end of the year, and as you would appreciate. As you would appreciate, as labor is cutting across every single sector. Mm-hmm. You see, if you are single and a bachelor, before you take a decision as to which areas to concentrate on when you make a proposal, ultimately, you would want to prioritize. So I'm trying to say. Mr. Moroto, we are including Khalib, including everybody else, and Chair, the rest of the political parties here. I think ultimately we need to agree as politicians and as officials. We need to agree ultimately on issues that we don't have to disagree anymore. I mean, we are towards 20 years now. We can't continue to give excuses that we are all the time, learning curve. We need to come to a position where officials as classes and politicians, as classes, whether at the level of parliament, at whatever level, we need to agree on certain priorities that we no longer have to politicize certain issues. We just have to headlong implement this. Because you see, agricultural sector, transport, and mining, honestly, I mean, these are the key aspects of our economy, and you can't continue to experience strikes all the time in those sectors, because those are key. We need to ultimately agree on some priorities that we no longer have to politicize this matter. We just have to have long going to implement it, because it's high time.
You still want to take a bite on this?
Chairperson, I want to go to a new topic if possible.
I wanted to start something new too. Okay. There are two issues that I want to discuss quickly. It's the program. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a memorandum that we received from it's a special report that was the annual international report, which is referred to us. So, I'll give it to you to read, and then maybe we can discuss it. The other one is the program. You can't leave because you, the program is. There's the meeting tomorrow. I mean, okay. And there is a tomorrow. Next week, Tuesday. Next week, Tuesday. Compensation Fund annual report, issues raised previously, including the private partnership contract, it's lapsing. Way forward on the blah blah. And I would like to add something on that Wednesday, so that on Tuesday, so that we close on Tuesday rather than on Wednesday. That we move the sheltered employment factories to next year, and then we deal with adoption of outstanding bills that will be done by members when the department is gone. So that what we do next week Tuesday will be compensation fund and public-private partnership contract, and then minutes.
Support.
Is there?
Support.
Oh, that is a. It's seconded by.
No,
Okay, we are done with that one. Now there is this memorandum. I think we'll discuss it. Because I haven't actually looked at what is in this report. Maybe we can touch it when we meet on Tuesday and check whether it needs us to take whatever action that needs to be taken.
I come from the Western Cape, and we have seen some industrial action in the Western Cape over the last 2-3 weeks, which really had devastating effects. And you know that the 4th of December has been set by the unions as a deadline to the Minister of Labour to resolve certain issues regarding the sectoral determination for farm workers. Now, the minister has made a public announcement yesterday that it will not be able, she will not be able, in terms of the law, to come up with a new determination before next Monday, and also that a new determination will only be able to kick in on the 1st of April next year. My problem is just that some of the unions and some individuals who are also public representatives of the same party that the minister is a member of have created an expectation that something will happen, you know, within 2 weeks, which end on the 4th of December. And I'm just asking, while Mr. Mkalipi is here and we paid for his plane ticket and so on, whether he would not be able to just tell us what the department is doing to convince the unions to use their influence at ground level to just speak to the employees and just make sure that we have, an orderly and calm situation to give the department the opportunity to conclude with their public hearings. Thank you.
Yeah, that is a good one, Mr. Honorable Van der Leyden. But I think, can we have this thing as a first item on the Tuesday meeting so that we get proof about what has happened? Because that meeting is on the 4th, actually. There's another hand, because I was making a suggestion. Nandanegambo, your hand up.
No, sir. My hand was to suggest that we can't discuss that matter. Really, we can't discuss that matter in the Portfolio Committee. Because it's an issue that has to be attended to in terms of legislation. The issue of the 4th, who agreed on the 4th, is it between the unions and the farming industry? I think let's not do that. I'm pleading with my colleague for us to say to the department, go and discourage unions not to argue. We don't know what is entailed in the agreement as a result when the strike was suspended.
I don't think we should mix up issues here. Can we get a report on Tuesday about what is happening and the way forward? Because the minister made this thing yesterday and she's okay. Unless if somebody knows what the minister, what informed the minister to say whatever she has to say. Because the problem is that if we say somebody prefers now, and then we realize later that we're not given the right information, the person will say, but why do you ask me to? I never was given a chance to make preparations for this matter. So I was just saying, certainly, that for us to get in something meaningful and tangible report that will tell us what has happened, because it looks into the past and the future, and there's nothing that we can do now in this minute to influence whatever. Because from what I read in the press, it has something to do with the act that you cannot change a determination until after a particular time. So what immediate intervention discussing this can help us on that one, definitely nothing. Let's get a well-informed training on Tuesday, and it should not actually occupy our whole day, that we give 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 5 minutes of presentation, 15 minutes discussion on this, and we close it. Honorable Mutabu.
It's just a quick one. It's just my concern that the minister is being accused of framing up a low-key civil war with the state. The announcement she made, I think, I'm just expressing a concern that I think that language was very intemperate, and I don't think the minister was trying to do that.
Look, we don't get our direction from the newspapers. This is what they've reported. And we have gone to the farms in the Western Cape. We know what the newspapers
can say.
I had a meeting with a lady who reported negatively about our visit. And she was apologetic, she said, it's not me, it's the editor. You know? But I think let us get this information on Tuesday so that whatever we have is something that can be very useful. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned until Tuesday.